One President Rose Dastie called roll. Move your ear and we'll give Commissioner the report for the record.
Okay, so here we go. I call June 1, 2023, at the whole meeting of Franklin Park District Order. We can call roll and move the time.
7:01. Member Gorham?
Yes, permission to report.
Member Foley?
Permission to report here.
Member Snyder?
Permission to report.
Chair Brooks?
Here, permission to report. It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under 5 minutes. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, Steve Wynn, 3 minutes to person, and this would be when Ms. Shepherd would read any emails.
I did not get any emails asking to be recorded,
okay.
Or read aloud.
Okay, very good. Okay, so I am now going to move on to our first order of business, the park grant for Watts Recreation Center. Lisa Shepherd, Chris Miner, and Bobby Collins will lead the discussion, introduce Bob Ijams and Matt Duggan from White Design.
All right, well, I'm going to throw it right over to Bobby and Chris, and we're going to review the Watts Recreation Center scope and what we presented to the Watts Advisory Group. So, they're on the wall with
the hockey
control L.
So, as you know, hopefully, we, as a park district, has been awarded at $2.5 million as part of the park grant through the IDNR. How we got here, staff went through a condition assessment over the last number of years and identified areas where there needed to be significant investment in infrastructure to replace at Watts. And you can see by the red here, there is a significant amount of infrastructure that has reached the end of its useful life. So, timing was good. The IDNR announced the park grants, matching grants up to $2.5 million, and we thought this was a really good project based on the amounts of infrastructure that needed to be replaced and the expanded usage of the facility and the kind of momentum we have with our after-school programs and our enrichments. We thought it was a natural fit. So what is the park grant? It's specifically designed as for facility construction. So we know that there's the OSLAD, which is more of an outdoor, but this park grant is more based on replacing and enhancing current infrastructures for facilities. So it provides up to 75% matching grant, up to $2.5 million. As part of that grant project, we were going to be funding for the park district $1.5 million. So what makes it attractive? It's extending the useful life of an existing facility. And it's making improvements. It addresses public health and safety needs, and then corrects deficiencies with the ADA. So they give priority to projects that are indoors.
So as we discussed previously, the best part about this project was we leveraged the existing dollars we knew we were going to need to spend on maintenance, so maintenance dollars. So maintaining that current level of service, obviously, the dasher boards, the compressor controls, the LED lighting, the sloped roof, various HVAC upgrades. We know that we don't currently have a fire suppression system, and we have some challenges with the water main and the sewage system. So we took that $1.5 million that we had discussed, knowing that we were going to need to spend in the next 1 to 3 years to maintain continuity service. And we leveraged that against the grant total of $2.5 million. So for that $1.5 million that we knew we were going to need to spend either way, we were able to get the renovated indoor space. So that includes the additional programming space, the very necessary ADA upgrades, our elevator, restroom improvements, improved flow in the facilities, as far as the front entrance goes, the skate room, those things, and a fire suppression system. So effectively, we have the park grant, which is a $2.5 million award, and the net cost of the district of $1.5 million. So this is a little tough to read. So this particular graphic shows the project timeline. It's a little tough up here on the wall. So we started all the way back in June of 2019. We approved the development plan with White. Back in August of 2019, we moved forward with community input in October of 19. We had community input meetings again in November. The board approved the concept plan, which White is here tonight to talk about. So again, that concept plan is basically our foundational grant application. Our project can get no smaller than the concept that White is going to present to us here tonight.
to meet the expectations of the IDNR in executing our grant. So the grant cycle closed in January of 2020, and we submitted our grant. And then, as we all know, March of 2020 happened, and we took a pause for a year. Awards were announced in March of 2021. Again, as to what Bobby said, there were 96 applications. We're going to basically, we're at the point now of beginning to develop our contracts, beginning to move forward, taking that concept that we developed for the grant and moving it to an actual construction project. So Bob Idens and Matt Duggan are here from White. They're just going to kind of go back over the grant concept. So again, this is really the, what we must do to receive the $2.5 million from the state of Illinois. So I'm going to introduce Bob and Matt. And if you guys want to come up and take the board through the concept plan.
Come right up on the podium.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, first off, congratulations.
Thank you.
Really exciting. We're so excited to be part of it as well. To this point, I don't know how shy you.
I will just give me a little signal here, Matt, and I'll take care of you.
Do we have a copy of that?
It's pretty much what's in there.
Okay.
It's the actual images that are drawn for the Watts Advisory Committee presentation. So.
Got it.
I think the last time I was here was November 2019, presenting the same.
You skipped
two pages.
We're old.
We have different methods of looking at this information, and we're confusing ourselves. So I think we're done now.
Yes, okay. We skipped two pages, right. So we are good.
Sorry.
Everyone ready?
Yeah, please,
I'm ready.
Continue.
Go ahead.
Okay. So some of the things that, in addition to what Chris mentioned, is the infrastructure improvements and upgrades. You know, this scope of this concept also improves things with the building. One of the main things that we really were focused on is the wayfinding on site. You know, today it's very difficult to find that main entrance. A lot of it has to do with some of the elements that are existing on site. We found some ideas on how we can really improve. And there's really two points of entry to that building. You got the skate and the school entrance. We really wanted to make sure that those two were defined well as part of our concept. This is the existing basement level. Right now, any of the teams, they have to come down those stairs on the east side and kind of navigate with their gear as they go back up, and it's very challenging for them. And there's no accessibility down to that level with the exception of the stair right now. In the existing first floor, on the very bottom of this plan is the entry to the skate area right now. Again, difficult to navigate when you got your gear in your bags, and you, right now the skate reception and where you get your skates assigned kind of gets congested in that area. So one of our goals was to improve the circulation throughout. In addition, we wanted to improve some visibility with the staff so that they can be able to see both rinks and also into the skate room. Flip back one more slide. The very top, kind of in the center, on the right-hand side, the existing restrooms, if you've been in them, they're very tight. They're definitely not accessible. And that was one of our keys, too. We knew we needed to improve the accessibility and have those restrooms meet ADA. Okay. Second floor really is an underutilized space. It's just mainly used for storage right now. You have the single stair going up there. You have another very small restroom up on the second floor. But other than that, there's no practical use for the Park District except for the storage. And so that was one of our goals, exploring what we could do on that level. These are some early studies on how we would look at maybe parking along the street with some pull-in parking. There's thoughts on, you know, at any point down in the future, could there be a north lot? These were some early concept studies that we did. But the main thing was defining those two points of entry for both the before and after program from the preschool, from South School as they come down, and then the main entrance. And some of the things that we're doing on the main entrance is widening that walk to that skate entrance. And then there's an existing plaza that's there that kind of causes part of the confusion. So we're thinking, is there a way we can relocate that to the main entrance? Is it still something that the Park District would want on that location? But right now, its current location causes some confusion on going into that one entrance. This is the new basement, proposed basement plan. This shows the elevator there. That's big for those teams, of course, that are down in that basement level changing. It gives them an easier access up to the main first floor.
Why don't you flip it?
Flip it. Do the ones by the front. Sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
You can sit in there for a little bit.
Yeah.
We've also identified a potential restroom maybe in the future that could be in that lower level as well. Other than that, the skate equipment sharpening room and the mechanical room would remain the same. Here's where a lot of change happens on this first floor is we've added a vestibule to the skate entrance, and you know the idea is to have the sliding kind of Star Wars doors because that really makes it much easier for people bringing their gear in, and it kind of gives a little bit of a queuing space going into the lobby. We've also changed the desk, the skate desk, to have two points where you can actually check in at the main side right at entering the doors. But then if you want to pick up the skates, you can do that on the north side of that plan, on the top of that plan. We've also right now, I believe that the staff area actually step up into, which is not accessible. So we've revised the staff office and done a couple of things. We've provided visibility from that staff office in all directions, so they can see the lobby, they can see the studio rink, they can see the main rink, and they can also see into the skate room. It kind of gives better control. It also allows, you know, maybe you can have a single staff person working that area at certain times. So from there, the lounge is kind of uninviting right now, and we want to look at how we can dress that up with some finishes and minor modifications, but to kind of create a little bit more of a space for parents to hang out while they're waiting. Similarly, in the skate room, no storage. We wanted to put some areas for lockers in both the lounge and the skate room for people's backpacks and coats while they're on the ice. Important, we've also modified both men's and women's room in that existing corner to meet accessibility. We lost a fixture, but we could afford to lose that toilet fixture in there in order to make those accessible. The blue colored program room really doesn't change. It's your existing space. It's got a lot of historical significance to the building. We didn't change that. The green program space currently is divided with a wall down the middle that really never created much function in those spaces. So we've looked at that as a single program space. But more importantly, at the very top of the plan is a new entrance coming into the before and after program school entrance. It's off of the walk that leads to South School, and it also has a waiting area for kids that might be getting picked up and direct access to the second floor. Second floor, expanded the footprint of the second floor and created two, for the most part, equal size program spaces up there. Could be multi-use. They're each about 1,000 square feet. That is the same size as the spaces you have on the first floor. So they're all very similar in size. And in addition, we've improved and added a second restroom and made the two restrooms accessible. And then as you see in the heart of the building, the elevator that I mentioned in the basement, that actually goes up all three levels so you can get access to that level. That was important to kind of really activate that second floor, was to get that elevator access up there.
Currently, there's only one way up and one way down.
Stairs. Yeah.
It's dangerous for that area.
Oh.
Yeah.
Probably screw something up doing this. Oh, there we are. And the dashed in red is just some of the existing building that would be part of the demolition that would allow us to kind of take advantage of that second floor there. On there. Again. In the package, just to show you which walls get demoed, this area here where the elevator is going really was a unused, almost like a catering kitchen that was in there.
The concession stand.
Yeah. And so we've kept a function of a kitchenette here, but then we're able to take advantage of some of the space to get that elevator in there. It's the second floor that's existing, again, mainly storage as of today.
Just a question on the second floor,
yep.
And there's probably room for questions later, but while you have it up there, how do you get from, can you go back, how do you get from the red room to the bathroom?
The existing or the new?
Yeah, the existing room to the bathroom.
There's a door right there in the existing.
No, to the room, that's the multi-purpose room, right?
No. This is second floor.
This is the first floor, Michael.
Sorry. Okay. The second floor.
Yeah, the second floor on this particular, I mean, why don't you go back to maybe those existing plans, Chris, that can be.
Yeah, how do you get from that green room to the bathroom?
Oh, there's a vestibule corridor right there.
Got it.
Yep.
And there's...
Yeah, sorry. Did you want me to go back?
No, that's okay.
No, no, we're good. You can be here.
Yeah. As long as that answers your...
Yep.
Yeah, so this is open up. Both rooms kind of conjoined, opened up, and then you can get access to the restroom. You can probably flip back to where we were. But go back. I think you were there. Keep going. One more. I think you're going backwards.
Which way?
Oh, go forward.
Forward. I'm sorry.
You want forward?
Yeah, where we left off.
I think this was it, right?
No, one more.
This was it.
Yeah. Yep. And that's just the isometric view of the demolition of the second floor. I think it's easier to see kind of in plan. The next view, though, if you can flip the page, this is showing a massing of that new addition off of the north end of the building. It's not meant to be the architectural design. It's really meant to be the massing of the building. You know, we do see importance of matching some of the roof lines that are there existing. We do see that, you know, important to identify that entrance for the school. So both from the pedestrians maybe coming from the school or parents dropping off and picking up, it's very clear where the school entrance is. This is where, it's a little difficult on this view to see, but this is where we've extended that vestibule into the skate room too. Some of the improvements on the exterior, we're showing a new 30-foot high net, puck net, especially right where you have a lot of the residential homes backing up to that, so that's kind of to keep the pucks in the... And then also upgrading the existing lighting in both the plaza and around the rings to an LED. This new fence line along the north really provides better control and security. Right now, you actually exit out of the fence to get over to the team boxes. This kind of keeps all of the players and coaches and parents within the WAD site and not having to leave to get into the stands that are on the east side of the rink. That may be it. Is there anything left on these? Next slide. The basement view. I think we can probably just pass through these. These are just same plans that we saw in isometric.
The last slide.
Yeah. And that's what we presented back in 2019. Right now, this is the concept that we continued with. This is what was showed as part of the park grant application. Any questions on?
Might be too specific right now, but where you have the kitchenette, we had access to that from the front room, and there was like a counter, so if you were going to serve there, are we going to keep elements of that?
So we've continued to keep access from the blue program room to that kitchenette, as well as one off of the lounge side too.
Okay, good. I couldn't tell if that's what that
is. Yeah, there's a new door. We've kind of shown a new door into the blue program room.
And we're not losing any functionality in that. Because that program room can be a nice rental space.
Oh, it's a nice cell.
Exactly.
And the kitchenette.
So. The kitchenette's perfect size for that room, but
yes.
The other was wasted space.
So it was just like lots of square footage for no reason.
Got it.
But there's no counter anymore, Stephanie. I think that's the difference.
So were we talking about like a roll top window?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're asking, Stephanie?
Well, yeah, access and serving.
Yeah, I don't think you can serve from it. I don't think you can sell from it anymore.
No, we're not selling from it.
Right.
We're not using it as a concession stand anymore.
Well, like when we have special events and they have hot chocolate out and things like that, is there going to be.
We'll utilize other rooms, but the time you do it didn't justify having the big concession stand area. We needed it for the elevator, which is more important. Would you agree, Bobby?
Yeah. We'll still be able to do hot chocolate events and things like that. I don't think we'll lose any functionality in that way. But we'll still be able to, if you have a birthday party that wants to keep the cake in the fridge or do something like that, we'll still use them. We're not going to need the concession, full concession area.
And space for, a lot of lunches are stored there for camps and for back, there's still going to be full size capability.
Mm-hmm. We've built bridges in the program rooms too, so we don't foresee any restriction there. We'll be able to take care of all that.
So in the blue program room, we're not to belabor us all 24/7 becoming the dominant point. I apologize, but obviously we were thinking the same thing. If you rent out the program room and you wanted to use the kitchenette for food service or something like that, but it would be through a doorway, is that
correct?
It? I thought there used to be a window.
There's a row
there.
Of window. Yeah. So it'll actually be much more functional.
Right.
You won't have to serve it through the window or walk around.
Oh, there didn't used to be a doorway. That part I remember. Okay,
There's a metal counter.
Yes.
And a roll up down.
Very good. I'll just finish one more question. Is there, and the plans don't show us, obviously, this is preliminary, but lots of nice windows on the second floor so the children have.
It would be our goal as well.
And connection to the outdoors and all that. Oh, good. Okay. Thank you.
I have a whole bunch of questions, and I'll try and be succinct.
Mm-hmm.
I realize, as someone who likes to dabble in home improvement myself, the easiest place to put that bathroom is right above, on the second floor, right above the bathroom on the first floor. Am I the only person that is concerned about, you know, a kid having to go from one program room to another program room for the bathroom? I realize there may not be options, but I almost wish that we had, you know, some way to kind of, and I don't think there's enough space, but some way to put where the storage room is, put the bathrooms there so that kids can kind of access it from both rooms. But I realize we're in limited capacity, and I imagine that's probably the limiting.
Yeah, that would be the driver there. I could not get both of them without taking space out of the program room to get both those restrooms in there.
Okay. The basement, as I think, I don't know if Bart has kids that play hockey, but I certainly do. Tell me about the ventilation there, because that's going to stink to high heavens like it already does. Like, are you guys working on that to get the horrific odor from the basement, from hockey gear and stuff, out?
That'll be something we'll obviously look at. I don't have a solution I can present, but getting some exhaust out of those spaces.
Okay.
I agree, even when no one's in there, they still have that residue of smell.
Oh, it's awful.
I know.
And do you have to put a bathroom in the basement? Is that required?
No, because you have one up on the main level.
Okay, so you do not have to.
Do not have to. It's more of a convenience. We've always called it a potential if there was a desire.
I will tell you, the bathrooms by the hockey lockers are usually horrifically disgusting, and no one ever uses them. So if there's a better functionality for that space, I'm not opposed to it, although we have two other board members that can opine. But I see every hockey room, and you guys probably see this with skates, it has a bathroom attached to it that no one has ever used. And it's filthy and disgusting. So if there's a better use for that space, I think that we can do that.
I think it's important to note that the current ventilation system has no sanitizing capabilities. It's really basically a residential furnace and air conditioner jammed in the basement. So it's just pumping around the same stinky air.
Oh.
There's no no cleaning of it, basically, other than a paper filter like you would have in your house. So
definitely
something I think they
recommend.
Because it doesn't get any outside air. It draws off the chimney.
It's recirculating.
And then my final question is, can you go back to the first floor? Can you explain to me where the school, Lisa, do you foresee using the left side exclusively for the school for drop off, pick up, everything is going to be on that left side of the room?
The new entrance?
The new entrance?
Yes, we do.
Awesome.
On enrichments too, so.
Love that.
Yeah.
And then, where is the new entrance? Is the new entrance, so it's really the same entrance. So we're
same
not
entrance,
using that.
Extended it out.
Because you were mentioning the confusion of the building. So it is very confusing where you've got this beautiful building and you don't enter there as well. I'm not opposed to that. I actually think people can just deal with it, but I thought you were going to...
Well,
there's right, but not really.
Part of the confusion comes, there's a plaza that's outside of this.
Yeah.
And it's got a large walkway.
Yep.
So our thought was, can we remove the plaza, widen the walk to the what we consider the main entrance here is going to help, and then we do a perpendicular walk to that door just for an egress, but kind of taking the attention away from that the
that
existing
door. Yeah,
got it.
But leaving access.
Yeah, we'll have to have access for egress. but instead of making it the primary when you're coming up from your parking, this will become. And then we'll have some bike parking as well here.
I have a question about the green program room. So it looks like there's an entrance. I see the stairs, but is there an entrance to the right? Is this the vestibule? So I guess those are glass doors. Is that correct? So the natural light comes through the two sets of glass doors.
Correct.
So it's a program room, but then there's another vestibule at the other end. So the thought would be that people wouldn't walk through that program room when there was something going on? Or, I'm just trying to understand the flow. And I have to tell you, I looked at your website. I mean, the buildings are stunning. You know, I was excited about what you could do here. So I think it's nice, but I was just trying to understand.
Well, the purpose of that we're seeing this vestibule is, one is it's an area to the kids can stay dry when they're waiting, but also it allows you the access to the stair to get to the second floor program rooms without having to walk through the building or walk through this particular room. You can come in, you can go upstairs for certain programs, you can go straight into this green room if you had a
storage for.
We talk about like backpacks.
So, Bart, what we're going to use that, because you're new to the board, what we use that for is we have a large after school, before and after school program.
Yes.
And an enrichment program. So when they come from school, or if you drop off with the bus or whatever, they'll go right down to that vestibule right in front of the program room. And then they'll either go into the program room on the first floor or go on upstairs to the second floor, wherever their after school program is that day.
Okay.
And in addition to that, we have enrichment programs. So they will also go through those entrances and go to their program room. Unless they're in the purple program room, then they might go in a different door. But most of the traffic will go through that new side, and then the other side is where we'll enter hockey and parties and things like that. We'll go through the hockey vestibule side. So we'll kind of break up the flow. Mm-hmm. So because hockey days, it gets really congested when we bring in, or skating days, I should say, not just hockey. When the rinks open, that area gets really congested, so we want to separate the programming room from the ice skating room.
And it's also worth noting that the hockey and skating is only 3 months a year, so we don't want to open up the whole building for 12 months. So that way we don't have the confusion where we have the whole building open to the world, we can actually designate where they can come in.
It'd always be cool if you could somehow use the lounge as an extra.
We do.
Outside of hockey season, we definitely will. Then they just go through that vestibule.
Yeah, it's a really great space.
Once we close off the before and after the ring season, then we utilize that whole lounge area and the skate room for more programs. So we might add more programs in that area.
How far does the vestibule and the stairs come close to that path that's on that side? Is it like right up to it?
The concrete path to South School to the street, Randolph?
There's maybe that site plan I'll help show. So we're probably about 8 feet off of that walk to where the new stair building starts. That would be right there.
Is that the only new part of the building?
Is this the stair in the second floor?
The new fence. The fence is going to go out a little bit further, if you notice. They have more room on the other side of the main rink, so they get to the player's box.
Stop kids from sinking into hockey.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I took a quick extra question, stepping back in real quick. I have another sort of random question. The ceiling in the program, the existing program room that we rent out that you were just talking about, Lisa, is vaulted. Is that right? Is it vaulted?
Correct.
Was there any consideration to maybe unvaulting that and putting an extra room upstairs? Did we talk about this? 2019 seems like 20 years ago. So forgive me if I'm wrong, if I've done this before, but did we ever think about that?
Well, I think that room is probably part of the charm of Glencoe. I think we would be with a lot of opposition. I don't think we could probably do it. I'm not an architect, but that'd be, I don't know how tall.
I know early on in the conversations that this historical dances were held in that room, yeah. And there seemed to be a lot of history that we didn't really.
I do not want to interfere with the emotions of the people. So I redact the question, and we probably did discuss this.
Well, my role, I could say anything possible, but there's a reason why we didn't.
But we don't, I just don't want us to think.
New roof on it, though.
Well, yeah, I just don't want us to think like, you know, in 5 years, like, oh my God, like we needed more space here. The demand is growing, and you know, we should have, could have, would have. At least we put it on the table, and if the answer is there is some architectural, emotional, sentimental, or we can't afford it, I'm okay with that, and we can just speak to it, you know, in 5 years when we have to. That's good to know. Oh, it looks great. I think people were really excited at the committee.
They were, right?
Really excited. I think the only thing that was, I think, frustrating for the committee was the parking, which there's not much we can do about.
Yeah, and it wasn't even the whole, it was only
a couple of people.
I would say, yes, less than a handful of people, right? So it wasn't the committee at all.
Right. No,
I'm going to add something to that. We brought, I was your role last year.
And you did a fine job.
Well, you know, I've lost my position. But in any case, the whole parking thing came up.
Yep.
There was a really large group of people there. And the consensus, the overwhelming consensus is, parking really isn't a problem. There's plenty of places to park, and if we have to walk, half the block, it's really not that big
right.
a deal. So at that point, it seemed like an absolute, and then one person brought it up, as it happens, but that doesn't really reflect
the whole feeling. In fact, we got some calls after the meeting saying, hey, we just want you to know, you don't feel like we need parking. You know, there's a large majority that are kind of quiet that don't want to see the park paved over,
yeah.
which would rather walk, or, you know, it's good to know that our skating operation is not really going to change at all, right? We're not adding another ring out here.
Yeah.
So the skating is going to stay the same.
Right.
What's really increasing is our before and after school program and our enrichments, which those are more drop off and pick up. So what's really important, and staff has talked about this, is making sure that we have like four or five-minute parking zones or 10-minute parking zones where you can park your car, go pick your kid, get out, and move out so that there is that flexibility for those people that are dropping off and picking up. Not a lot of those programs in this particular building will be with parents that stay there with them outside of hockey or skating.
And this year, how we did that pick-up drop-off play really helped.
It really helped.
Yeah.
It did. So as you know, so you were a big part of that. So that was an important part.
And we're not expanding any of that footprint, so that function remains.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But are we putting slotted, is that what the parking's going to end up looking like? Are we doing this? Or
no,
we're not?
The original concept.
Original concept, okay.
The concept, and that's not within the funding mechanism we have right now.
Unless someone donates.
Someone
donates.
Well, we still think it was a good idea.
We want to talk about the timeline.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to know how long the building is commissioned for, if it is, which I presume it will be for a little bit.
This is a high-level kind of milestone. One of the things that's important to know is you have 2 years from when the grant's awarded to complete your project. So just keep that in mind. We're well under that, but that's something that's kind of one of the requirements.
So that clock has not started yet.
That
will
start
when the IDNR returns our signed grant agreement, which we have not signed yet. So we have not started the 2 years.
Oh, so we kind of have control over the start a little bit.
Not really.
Oh. we did not sign it for a little bit?
No, you risk losing it. So what we're going to recommend is we sign it at the next board meeting. Mm-hmm. You authorize me to do the grant agreement. Then we send it back to IDNR. It takes them a couple months to sign it. And then
it takes them months.
Yeah.
It could be
less.
The challenge with the IDNR is they could sign it in 8 days, or it could take them 3 months. And we don't really have a say either way.
But we don't feel like there's any risk that IDNR is going to pull the money at all?
We do not.
No,
they might delay the money. That's the risk.
But
we will eventually get our money.
And if they delay the money, do we have an option to, I guess, we've got some funds from ours. Can we?
Correct.
Okay.
So this is kind of a good point. The way that this grant is structured currently, we have to float to $4 million. So there is some dialogue in the new grant agreement about a potential midpoint disbursement, but that's not something that we've hammered out yet with the IDNR. So as we go into this, it is highly likely that, depending on our fund balances, floating to $4 million and waiting for the $2.5 million reimbursement may delay the next year's capital projects. We may have to hold and wait before we break ground on the next cycle after that.
We have the bond money that we just raised.
Correct.
Can that support this temporarily or no?
We'll use that all up. It's part of it.
So we will have the $4 million in our pocket before we start the project.
Right.
So we have all the money we need to retain White, execute the project, close the project out. Once the project is closed out, we've met the IDNR's expectations. We go through the legal process of submitting, they reimburse us for the grant, for the $2.5 million.
Got it. And that was, okay. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
And there may be a midpoint disbursement we don't know yet. Yes, we got to float it.
Yep.
Bob, you provided some references in here for other, like Glen Ellen and other areas. Was that for buildings at hot rates, or that was for other community centers?
That was for,
just other existing client references.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Now, I was just wondering if it was anything you had done that was related to hockey rink that inspired certain thoughts here, or something that I like to look at things as anything I go look at and say, hey, these are their ideas here. I can see what they need. But you guys do a lot of different stuff. I'm not saying that.
We have some local rinks, I mean, indoor, outdoor.
Right.
Niles Park District has an indoor and outdoor rink that we had done. It doesn't have the nostalgic value that
you're saying. Right. Well, not many do.
It's important to understand that we're not really doing a lot of architectural changing design-wise to our rink. We're not changing our rink, how it's laid out. We're putting gesture boards in, things like that. So that's not changing.
I was thinking more of the building.
They just did North Brooks.
Yeah, because I like Michael pointed out, you get it, you know, smell from like the hockey gear. And I lived in Europe for a while, and in all the buildings, there's a drying room. There's just ventilation, you know, whether it's for laundry or other things. So, you don't get that.
Sorry, you just did North Brook, which one?
For the Technique Prairie Activity Center.
It's a recreation. Oh, not the things, not the ice arena.
No.
That hasn't been touched in.
No, rec center. They just did the rec
center. I think it's important to frame this as a lot of replacement of the ice rink equipment, but this is really truly a recreation center style project. I mean, the dashboard boards that we're going to buy, that's out of the catalog. The lighting, you know, that's a very standard item. The compressor controls, the computerized control systems, I mean, it's not something that there's going to be a lot of dialogue on. I think that White's resume is very strong when it comes to the recreation center. I mean, ice rinks are a very niche industry. We have an unbelievable consultant on B32 who's done ice rinks from the NHL all the way down to, you know, community level like ours. So we're very satisfied with their ability to execute a project at this scope.
As far as the timeline, the top would be this year, 2021. Our goal would be to get through the design process this year. That includes kind of, you know, evolving from very schematic, developing the design into more technical drawings.
Could you define those, what each phase
sure.
is?
So schematic design is really taking this concept and really starting to ensure that any code challenges that might be there, any, you know, special program needs that may not have been shared originally, start to develop that plan a little bit more. And it evolves into design development, which is a phase where the building kind of takes a more three-dimensional look. We start to study ceilings and heights, and this is also where we start to look and feel of the building, the materials we're choosing, both interior and exterior materials. And it really kind of gives you that look and flavor of the building. The construction documents, that's the technical side. That really kind of advances those drawings to where a builder can then take that and actually construct them. And it's at the end of that, you know, you begin to bid the project. You want enough detail in those drawings that you get some good, you know, strong, tight bids. And it's also a great time of the year to be bidding at the beginning of the year. A lot of tradesmen are kind of getting their work lined up for that year. They're anxious to kind of get going and getting their books done. So we find kind of bidding, you know, unfortunately the latter part of a calendar year is the holidays. It's tough to get interest. But boy, starting off in January, bidding is actually a good timeline. What we're showing is we design the entire project and go out to bid with that. But we're proposing that maybe you want to focus on doing a split phasing of construction so that you're not taking your ice operations out of commission for any season whatsoever. You're starting that work in middle of March when you're kind of closing down the rink. You're doing that first floor work. And so you're up and ready to go in the fall when you start that next season. So that ice operation really never comes out. And then meanwhile, you can actually start the work on the second floor, and that'll extend a little bit longer. There's more work to that. You've got the elevator in there. You have some second floor work. That would kind of be happening in that second phase after you've kind of, you know, moved in and your staff kind of moves into the operations of the ice. And they're separate enough that you can do those two functions going on. So once you're running your ice facility, that work can still be happening on the second.
So really the only other item that came up during our WATS advisory meeting was really the discussion about the cooling floor. As you recall, and Mark, this is probably new to you, that we did a whole infrastructure study on the facility. And they said the cooling floors will last about 8 to 10 years. That was two or three years ago. And since then, since we've actually applied for the park grant, Chris, you want to tell them what we found in the cooling floor?
You have the cooling floor, the pipes?
So yes.
Okay,
yes.
Just to kind of define the way the cooling floor works is we have plastic PVC pipes. They're fusion welded together. They're poured into concrete. Glycol, which is very similar to what the antifreeze you might have in your car, is chilled in the compressor and pumped around throughout the concrete. Breaks the concrete slab down between about 80 degrees and 20 degrees, depending on what we're doing, so we can make the ice. This year, we have a leak. So we've had leaks before. We had a leak 4 years ago. It worked its way to about a $60,000 repair. There are two types of leaks. There's leaks you can fix, and then there's leaks you can't fix. And we were able to operate the rink this season with a leak by topping off the glycol as we go and monitoring it. That's really not a long-term fix. You can't continue to just top it off, top it off, top it off. So what we're proposing is to move right into an assessment of the leak, because we need to know going into this, is this a leak that requires a 10 by 10 section of rink floor to be cut out and repaired, and if we can just incorporate it into our project, or is this a leak that we need to look to how we're going to fund that phase two of replacing the cooling floor sooner than we thought. So
really the discussion, what we're looking at is we want more information before we make a recommendation back to you. It might be the discussion and how you have that discussion when you get to your car and you get to a certain age, and then you take it to the mechanic and they say, oh, you need a new transmission.
You're wondering.
And they're like, should I do a new transmission or should I buy a new car? And then you're like, I'll put a transmission. And then 6 months later, oh, now you need new brakes. Oh, should I buy a new car or should I fix brakes? So that may be what we're coming down to, is that we have to have a slight logical decision. Should we spend $50 million, hard to choke that one down, now when we're under construction, or should we do a phase two like COC? Now remember the criticism we got for COC.
I don't want to do a phase two like
phase two of COC, you remember that whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's something to just, you know, that you do phase one, we all know we have to do a phase two, and then all of a sudden it looks bad because you're tearing it out. Again, they're like, well, why didn't you just do it once? That's what came up at the committee meeting we talked about there. You should just do it all at once.
So
did we have, did we, in the, what did we just do a bond for? I forget, right? My work bond was $6.8 billion.
It was about $4.5 billion.
Already, how much?
About 2 billion.
Right, yeah. Okay. So that's about 2.5, 2.6 left. Did we remind me, because again, I'm blind and I'm obviously forgetful. Did we allocate, so 2 million is committed for what we did about 6 months or 9 months ago. Did we allocate anything to Watts in that?
So can we put a pin on that and we come back and talk about the Apple project? Because I just wanted to float that out there, but that's a question we want to answer. But let's get through this part. So let's talk about now the, these national, we can leave the white contract. We'd like to approve at the June 15th meeting. So we put it in your board packet. We have these men, gentlemen here, if they answer any questions. If you have any questions about their agreement, I want to remind you that in their agreement, there was some talk about also doing the construction management part. We're not looking at that right now. We're just looking for the design, and then we're going to come back around and talk about the construction management portion. But that's optional. We're going to look at different.
It's not optional in executing the project.
Yeah,
it's optional as to whether White provides that service for us or provided by
us. We have to have a construction management firm.
And the 7.5% is not included. 7.5% is for the
design.
And just remember that the grant also, we can allocate design services to that grant money. So
that White's fees are included in the grant. The estimate, the $4 million that was sent to the IDNR, included an allowance for those design fees. So that's part of our match to the grant.
I mean, does it really matter if we're putting our 1.5 in anyway?
Well, that's
correct. We're just telling you that's part of it.
Yeah, but it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant whether we say White's money comes out of the 2.5 and stays in the 1.5.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
With this grant, is there any kind of special, like with the trail, they had to approve everything. Is there any kind of agreement with this kind of, with this grant that IDNR has to do anything? Or?
So there are quarterly reporting, and there are performance. The performance expectations will be namely specifically related to the grant that we submitted. So the trail grant was a little different because they wanted to make sure folks weren't submitting a sidewalk and calling it a trail. So they outlined what they perceived the trail to be. This grant could be applied to the Watt Center, it could be applied to a swimming pool, it could be applied to a tennis center. So there's not a specific grant language other than we obviously need to meet ADA codes, we need to meet all the modern building standards, and we need to make their quarterly reporting. But there's nothing in the grant that says you have to use this flooring or that window or this kind of door.
And when you give them those quarterly reports, are they approving it, or it's just you have to provide them information?
You have to provide them information.
Okay.
So those are the same quarterly reports that we do on all our IDNR grants. It's basically a status to say, this is how much money I've spent.
And the designing wouldn't have anything to do with those reports, but whoever we hire to manage the construction, are they completing those reports?
They would support us and help you to complete those reports, but ultimately those reports are signed by, they're helped to be presented by the CM, but they're signed by either myself or Lisa. So the IDNR does not need to approve our design, but they will not pay us if it does not meet the expectation of what's in the grant. So they basically have all the control. We won't find out at the end of the project that it doesn't meet. We're going to be connecting and communicating with them all along. Same as with the village staff as well.
Good question.
Yeah, excellent.
The schedule part is pretty main here. 5 to 6 months. I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here with pandemics and things like that. The things taking longer, construction's taking longer. Is there any timeline for when these folks leave our project? Or is it really just tied to the project being completed?
You mean White?
Right. Does the design just go up until the start of construction? Is that?
Would you define?
I don't understand.
We continue through construction because we become. We need to ensure that what we design is built properly.
So I think Michael's question is: we currently have an IDOT project, and we had an ad for a CM at the end because the project went 3 months longer than it was meant to. So we ended up having to have an additional cost because we are required at this project to have a resident engineer on site. Your fee today is for everything that you've outlined in your agreement, and if the project takes 4 months extra, we're not coming back and providing additional fees because it's basically you're in till it's over. Outside of the CM.
I don't think that's clearly, hey, you're in till it's over is clearly outlined in here. I'm sure that's the intent, but just if you guys may want to just double and triple check that, because I don't want to have a discussion about another tens of thousands of dollars for someone to come.
Well, just remember that our architects in the past have never come back in. structure management has, that's a possibility.
I have no idea.
If something goes out longer than it is, but for architecture, it's designed to run. That's common.
Usually the CM is the part where once the shovel goes in the ground, that's where you find the challenges. So the give and take with CM is you can either go in and create this all-encompassing contract that's just a forget-me-not. And you end up paying 8 or 9%. Or you have this really very tight contract and you say, okay, well, I'm going to pay you an extra $700 per meeting that you attend. And I only need 3 more meetings. And that way I spend an extra $2,100 versus, say, you know, $20,000. So it's a give and take. And we've done it both ways. We've gone in with these really very large encompassing contracts. And, you know, there is comfort in just knowing that they're on your team until it's done. But having that control and knowing that it's a very tight contract can be very beneficial on smaller projects.
Look, if you guys are experts on this, if you're not losing sleep over this, then...
It was reviewed by our attorneys.
I mean, if White was coming back to other park districts and shaking them down for money 80% of the project, they wouldn't be in business.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be sitting in the room tonight.
Right.
And that's honest.
And the retired district guy from Niles or...
Those are...
Wouldn't want to give his recommendations.
So
I get it.
The references that are in here specifically relate to the CM process. White was brought in to the park district under the RFP process to do the fitness center. So we've had multiple successful projects with them leading to this point.
You should have started with the new fitness center. You know, I would
like a look.
You know, I'm here every day.
So,
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
We're revisiting the cooling floor issue.
Yes, when we go to get the projects, yes.
So
any other questions on that?
Anything related to the cooling floor that involves White Design and their subconsultants would be an addendum to this contract or a separate agreement at this point.
Any other questions?
There's no new technology that we're doing as part of this building renovation improvement. Is there just things are wearing out? They've been there for a long time. We're just getting new equipment, dashboards, whatever, right? There's no
For the dashboards, yes, we have new dashboards. Those are worn out.
But in terms of like,
well, the cooling floor and stuff like that, that would be different.
But that's different. That's
part of this. We will be getting new computerized controls for the compressor system. So our current compressor is running on relays.
Okay.
So when we have a brownout, we have to go through and check, pull relays, things like that. So we're looking at a computer control system, something that our facility techs can get updates on their smartphone about what the ice temperature is.
Okay.
So really, in that sense, it's bringing the rig operation into the modern age as much as you can with 28-year-old equipment, or 24-year-old equipment, excuse me.
Good questions.
Okay.
Anything else?
Okay.
Any other questions for...
So we can't simply approve this. We just
need
a consensus to the board meeting.
So we could do the consensus first, or we could dismiss our visitors. Why don't we do the consensus now?
Okay.
Because that might lead to more questions. So do we have a consensus that we're going to move this onto the board meeting and work towards approval? Yes?
I'm fine.
Okay, very
good.
You
guys aren't losing sleep.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Duggan and Mr.
Items?
Yes. Sorry. I kind of like the name, it's kind of different.
Terry likes it. If you see an Apple product.
Yeah.
My daughter is a gymnastics and they call her iTunes.
That's not bad. You should not have told me that.
I know, you don't want to
be
in
the Bob, he's got a good sense of humor.
Okay, so thank you. Very nice presentation. It's very clear and very understandable. I appreciate it.
Thank you
for coming.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay.
We're going once again.
You probably, I really missed the Zoom meeting.
No one can ever say what's our real
Dorfman.
Well, he doesn't have a choice.
Moving on, we will move on to capital funding planning. Lisa Shepherd and Ms. Liner will now lead that discussion.
All right, so we really just updated your binder for all the current commissioners, and then Bart, you received the full binder of what we have spoken about for the last couple of years. What we really want to do is focus on tab number 5 tonight. Okay, so we're just going to bring your attention to what we have approved in the past and what we where are we at now from our last discussion last year. So in 2021-22, we had some outgoing master plan projects. Obviously, those are all finishing up this year. So the boathouse access, which is they started the stairs today, I believe, right?
The carpenters, yes.
Yep. Beach access crib wall. South Overlook is complete. Cock Park drainage is 65% complete. The pier decking will start in the fall, so it's in design right now. We always have a ticket roof sinking fund so that we can afford said roof in how many years, 10 years or whatever it needs to be replaced. And then we have the WAS dasher boards. Obviously, those have been postponed because we got the grants. So now we're going to go into the proposed fund list for 67-69 for next year. As you recall, when we presented you with this book originally, we had two options. One, if we didn't get the grant. One, if we got the grant. So obviously, if we're not getting the grant, one is out, and the one getting the grant is in because it substantially changes what we can spend money on because of this. So right now, we have, I don't know, Chris, if you want to jump in.
I think Carol's probably making a correction somewhere.
I
just put a spelling error in here just to make sure you guys all read it because I know we have some proofreaders on the board. So first off, as far as the projected balances go, these are audited numbers. So we're going to see, except the bond balance, that included the boards that were postponed this year. So we'll likely see some movement to these numbers, hopefully in the right direction because they're pretty conservative as we're still, as you can see in the previous page, working on some of our fiscal year projects this year. So you can see really the Watts project is going to dominate our capital plan next year, likely for the tail end of the year after that. We had briefly talked about fiscal year 23-24 projects. We had Lakefront Park, Lakefront Tennis, the Port in Place at Friends, the Shelton Pathway and Drainage. So you can see how, at this point, dependent we are on the disbursement of the park grant funds. So you see down at the bottom the funds available for future planning. Right now our estimate is somewhere around $2.6 million. That's expecting the $2.5 million from the IDNR. So obviously we're going to be in a position where we have the money to do this project based on our balances, but at the end of 2023-24, that's where that IDNR money is really going to come in handy as we start to move forward to the next phase. So you can see on the bottom, I have my favorite project up on the top, the maintenance center. So this is really our deferred maintenance backlog right now. You can see that we've currently got the rink cooling floors on here, the compressors. We know that the beach house is starting to get really tired on the inside. The shelters in the boardwalk, the playground and the splash pad. So all of these deferred capital items are drawn off of the heat sheets that we use, the red light, green light sheet. So these basically represent all the red light projects that we have in the next, 3 to 5 to 10 years. So as we kind of go forward with the dialogue about the scope at Watts, we are having to be realistic in knowing that any addition to that scope may mean that something on this list has to get pushed back even further or has to be, there is a risk of having to take something out of service. And, those risks are different. I mean, a risk like taking the Milton Playground out of service is a very different risk than taking the rink compressors out of service or losing the field lights to take it. So that's where we just want to have that dialogue.
So that's what you think about when we're looking at the list. Like, if we lost the rink floor, cooling floors, we couldn't operate the rink. Obviously, we're not getting cool guys, right? Does that mean push Milton or Lakefront Park playgrounds back? will that severely hurt our operations? Yeah, people would be mad because they want their playgrounds replaced, but we could still, there's other playgrounds in town. So that's kind of how you have to look at capital projects. Also, have to look, when we're looking at this, when we see the $9 million, you have to understand that probably our debt falls off of this building in 2025, right, Drew? 2025. At that time, you think, boy, it's like more and more likely that we're going to have to go for a referendum to replace some of these assets. In 2025, the debt falls off, we go for a referendum, your taxes never raise because we keep at the same amount, it just keeps at the same, so let me drop off, it just keeps the same. So when you look at some of these projects, you're like, which ones of these would pass a referendum? Should we go? So anything with beach, you know,
right,
passes a referendum.
Beach
wants,
right.
Watch, things like that are beloved in the town.
I think the center would.
Well, you kind of package that in,
right,
with
it.
But historically, didn't wants initially use, didn't it have an okay, so there you go. Now,
well,
let's not be so brazen, because that does happen, and we know it's important, but it's.
And so I
think there was, that did happen. I remember she does it.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Before, and I know I'm going to regret asking this question, but I'm asking.
Yeah.
Right now we have three outstanding or just two outstanding? Just two. The brand new one.
Yep.
And then how much is this one? The Tinkus one?
I think there's about $6 million left on it.
$6 million. But how? What was the original?
The original was $14 million.
$14 million. What could we go?
Referendum was for.
It's a referendum for. How much could we go for? John. How much could we go for in 2025 when the referendum bond of $14 million falls off? How much can we go for a non-referendum?
So to keep it level.
No. Just like what's the max that we can do?
Not without going for a referendum.
Without a
referendum, bonding authority is a lot higher than non-referendum.
No, I know.
Yes, so I have to look to the audit, but it's probably $20 million.
But no, we can't go to.
No, we can't.
Non-referendum.
We already maxed it.
We maxed it because of
the
previous
right now. So yeah, we're gain a little bit in the retirements over the next 5 years.
So we have to referendum no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And you have to understand, the bill of checks is how they do all the bonding. They have to do a referendum from any amount. So it's not unusual in this town to see those go up.
Yeah. I mean, the bill just happened.
Yeah.
We just had one.
But that means that it might be good if you could push this cooling board to 2025.
But then you take a risk
and it breaks.
Well, of course, we always do, but it would be good if we could. I mean, instead of saying, let's just say the car. I'm not going to replace the transmission. I'm just going to get a new car. I would look to this money in 2025. That's all I'm saying. And I will also add that 9265 is not really what it is, because the stairs at the beach are not our TV. So goodness only knows.
That's for you, Carol.
Goodness only knows what those are.
We probably have to look
You're right,
at a separate assessment.
I guess you can't even guess, but it does change my perception of what this number could be at easily 11 to 12 million dollars, but more things will add on there, the number will grow, right? My concern about the rink is, man, will we look foolish if we just have a brand new beautiful house and the only car in the garage is a 1967 Beetle that barely runs, right? I mean, if you're doing watts,
it would be really bad if
it would be really foolish of us to say, hey, we got this great grant and we're redoing this center, we're redoing the basement so that you have a great hockey room with sanitizer in the open fridge system. And then, you have
to walk. But you can't skate.
Right, I mean, that to me is...
You can't skate.
And to be quite honest, I'm not going to look at Chris right now. I can't tell if there's a little bit of bluffing here or if it's a reality that the thing could fail at any time.
I think it's always...
I get it. I mean,
I think I have to
Here's what I'm saying. I just don't know, because I'm not
that's why we're going to get someone to come and look at it. But I like that you wouldn't look at it.
I'm not looking at when I say this. I love him and I trust him and he's a great guy. But, like, you're going to, I always want to say in every meeting, I'm going to do the best I can do.
Right. I know.
And I think the concern is, if we're dealing with one break, it's one break.
Yeah.
Is it a break because we have a material failure? Because one break on a material failure might be 40 breaks the next year.
Right.
It might be 400 breaks the year after that. So I think what's hard for me in my career is I have literally spent 20-some years dealing with ice rinks at the end of their useful life. So, like, this has been something that has stressed me out for decades.
I think to
Michael's point, you're right. And we are, the perception in the community is going to be that it's a brand new ice rink.
Right.
And we saw what it took to unwind caulk in the perception that we'd done something wrong because the park flooded after we did not put a drainage system in. And we went back and had to spend only $300,000, which is just a fraction of what this cost is. But to Lisa's point, I think we look to that assessment. I think we really have to really rely heavily on these engineers and their assessment in guiding our vision.
I think that's right. I mean, look, I don't want to sit here at a board meeting and have a bunch of residents come in, because they're not going to understand how and why we spent the money that we spent. They're just going to see, holy cow, they're expanded watts, they put a second floor on, and wait, you don't have you can't even operate your ice rink this winter? That's the last place that I want to be in.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know the probability of that happening, so the assessment is going to be useful. You know my philosophy, I'd rather do something once right than put money into Milton Playground, or I can deal with the West Pony thing, right? There's the field at West School. I'd rather do it right the first time than have to go back. That's my general philosophy, but I just don't know if.
And I think the hard part with the assessment is it's just going to be a best guess because they're not going to be able to get into that kind of thing. They're not going to look at every pipe.
But what would help me is to understand, if this thing has a catastrophic. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. I almost want to put the $1 million in like a little bit of a box over there and say, look, we're going to push as hard as we can. But if something breaks, we're going to take that $1 million, we're going to fix it as fast as we can. So I guess I don't understand, if something breaks and it's catastrophic, how fast...
You have to tear up the whole race.
I would say we're probably looking at a lead time. Again, could we, if we blew the cooling floor, we could turn around and we could put temporary cooling out there for 1 year, roll the mat down, just like they do with the United, the Wrigley Field, when they do the Crosstown Classic. It's going to cost money. That could be a $90,000 expense for 1 year. We're not going to have the cooling floor blow a line the first week of November and have a shovel in the ground within 6 months. It's going to be a 1 year project, without a doubt, develop a plan.
But that's actually a really good information to understand. You're telling me that, I'm going to say it this way and you're going to hate me saying it this way. I'm going to say, worst case scenario, if I could buy my way into another year for $100,000.
Yeah.
That's actually really good to know.
And I might be telling you November, it's going to take them until January 20th to get here with the equipment. You've lost half your season.
I get it. But that's information that we have to know, too.
If they do it at the same time, how long does it take? If it's still within that
hour? It's going to change that timeline.
It's going to change that.
But I have a feeling, and they would have to tell us, we still don't lose a hockey season.
No.
They start in March, they do it all summer long. At the same time, they can still work on the building.
So people can still skate.
Right. Our direction to them is, I do not want that rink down for a hockey season.
Right.
So that's why they're going to start. As soon as the hockey season is over, that gives them 9 months. They should be able to do the cooling floor and the boards and everything, right?
They haven't lost a season by adding that. They won't extend the season, and it really is about skating and people buying houses and appreciating what their tax dollars are going to and all the rest of that. I think we would have a very difficult time not doing this. I hadn't thought this at the beginning, but I think it makes a whole lot of sense to do it. It's deemed advisable that we do it all at the same time, because it is wretched
to have to do a phase two when the phase two seems like the most important part of the whole.
Right, and people don't.
It's the ring.
Right.
I mean, it's like
Watts is the ring. It's secondary is it in people's mind. Watts is the ring.
Yeah.
Watts is winter.
Yeah.
It's very secondary and tertiary to a smaller subset of the community. It's childhood programming. For you, it's childhood programming. For me, it was 4 years ago childhood programming. But for the majority of the people, the primary is skating. Everyone can do it.
Except up until this year, we made money from our children. I think they're both equally important now, the facility and the way we're operating in the future. But you're right. I think there's you do get some egg in your face when you talk about saving it for referendum. Part of me is like, oh, you put that on referendum ballot, they'll be like, well, just fix it. Why do you need a bunch of that?
I'm also thinking,
what would make a referendum appealing?
But I don't know if that would make it appealing.
No, I think it would make it aggravating.
Yeah. Yes.
It would make it very aggravating.
Yeah. Except if you come back and they say, we have 10 years on that, then you're going to
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's broken right now. So it's
you know, we're at 0 years right now.
Well, no, it's we think we can fix this. And it may mean that we limp through one more season leaking and we go into breaking ground on the park grant project knowing that we have an allowance for rink repairs, or we could be breaking ground on the park grant project and putting it in for it.
I mean, unlimited funds, you would do it the right way,
right?
Before we start. Yeah. Chris, it says here it was installed in 2000.
Right.
Was some major project done or some renovation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, Carolyn, I'll let you handle the bond issuance in 2001.
Yeah, so in 2000, they went to a bond issue.
So we were one of the 14 agencies, particular agencies, that back when they instituted the tax cap. We didn't have a levy for bond interest because we always used to do it at that time out of our corporate fund. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of screwed because we did the right thing.
Yeah.
So it was reinstituted much later. So we knew we had to go for a referendum. There was discussion about donations.
And the
reality is that it lost.
Yeah.
The referendum did not pass, but it did pass the next year. Hindsight, we never did. We should have issued more. I think they were banking on more donations at the time.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So
they didn't come through.
Right.
Yep.
So, but that was done in 2000.
So in 2000, we got compressors, we got cooling floors, we got the dashboard. We had some additions to the building. There are, and we can talk about this later, Bart. There are.
So let's talk about the getting ice there for the season.
Yeah.
So was there something done to improve the pipes, or
it's all brand new for 2000?
Okay, but what's the useful life of something?
20 to 30 years.
Okay, so it could be a normal end of life.
Well, this is definitely the end of the life.
And is it, okay, and back to the technology, is it still done the same way? Is there a different type of concrete or something? Because I assume the concrete's cracked.
It's not the concrete. The issue is the polylines in the concrete. I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal speculation as to why we're in the situation that we're in, whether it was operator error in the first 10 years or whether it was construction issues. We have a lot of elements in the project that are really designed like indoor ice rink elements, and it's an outdoor ice rink. So, for example, the dasher boards that we have at the rink are roller hockey dasher boards. They're lower quality dasher boards, so at the ice rink with the Zamboni, they fail much faster than they normally should because it's a lower quality product. We also have, typically in an indoor ice rink, we have the poly lines in the ice are closer to the surface, and an outdoor rink they're lower because you're contending with the sun. So there's a number of different things with the rink in particular that we wouldn't do again in 2021 if we were going to redo it. We would likely have a product that's going to be of a higher quality and more efficient, but could I audit that number right now?
What if this rink were in Northbrook and you were hearing these rumors, what would you be saying? Would you be saying, hey, I've done a lot of hockey rink stuff,
I would say the cooling floor only makes you look bad. No one ever comes in and congratulates you that the equipment's working.
Correct.
So it's like no one ever writes a letter to the director that the bathrooms were clean. It's only the kind of thing that makes you look bad. It's an expectation of walking in the door that the cooling floor is functioning, it's efficient. If I was at any other district and I had problems with the cooling floor, I would say, you need to put a pin in what those problems are and figure them out. Like I said, it's like a pool leak. You have some leaks that you can run and you have other leaks that the pool won't hold water. You gotta figure out which leak it is.
And you can't, there's no fiber optic scope.
No. Basically what you do is you put a sounding on the ring. So if you've ever seen like a hokey spy movie when they put like a microphone on the safe and click the thing, they basically, this is how they listen for water main breaks. So you pressurize the system and a team basically crawls around on their hands and knees out on the ring with these huge microphones listening to hear where they can hear the water running. The same way you look for water main breaks.
Where, I think I know the answer, where is the leaking fluid going? Is this going into the ground?
Right. The ground.
How much is leaking?
Depends on the season.
Like a gallon a week? Like
probably.
There's a solution aspect here as well, but we are polluting. I don't know the level we are, but you know.
There's definitely.
And there's kids there. You know, I don't know if the stuff's
hot. I don't see us in a position where we're going to see like all bubbling up out of the park anytime soon. But I think I would just expect it.
Yeah, we don't have any clue, so we can't give you an educated guess right now.
So if I may, just because we've got a very heavy agenda here, if there isn't anything of great importance here with questions for Chris, I'm going to force us to move on to something quite important here. The updated employee compensation study, and as Carol mentioned, her, will lead to discussion.
In her last committee.
Yeah, oh no.
Voluntary one.
Happy. In the last.
Come back.
No, John's not saying she can come back.
I meant as a member of the public.
Just to give you a little history, so back in 2014, shortly after we started, we did not have salary ranges. We did not have salary grades. And that was one of the first things that Lisa said, how can we have a staff and not have ranges? We had some long-term employees that were very near. We found out they were over the ranges. So it was a good thing we had pay group come out and do basically a deep dive analysis of all of our full-time positions, only full-time, not part-time, from the executive director down. And they assigned grade levels and according salary ranges to them. Now they give you, they tell you that to adjust for CPI, you should adjust the ranges. And we do that, but they also recommend that every 3 to 4 years, based on what's going on, that we bring them back out and they do not the full deep dive of it, but more they do an analysis based on their own market data, and then they also utilize the data from Parks and Recreation agencies. So that is now done by HR Source, and specifically for North Shore communities, which typically are those of the type that we're in competition for high level staff, okay? So we did it again in 2018. We made some major adjustments at that time. Back in 2014, we actually made some specific adjustments to our children's circle teachers that we saw was very much lax. And so we made adjustments over a 3-year period for them. 2018, we did another review and made some adjustments to other positions. And before I left, Lisa said, you know what, it's 3 years, we'd like to take a look. Plus, we also felt that there is a pressure on the lower level grades. So those are typically the custodial staff here, entry level parks positions. And we felt like the minimum wage law was really putting some pressure on those positions. And so we gave Corn Ferry, who helped the Hebrew, the directive that we typically like to look at 5 specific job descriptions. And then we want them to pull the data from their sources. So they had 2 Corn Ferry sources and then our park district source. Some of those positions, like daycare, kind of difficult for the daycare within the HR source because we're probably one of the only daycare systems in the park district world in this area, in Chicago area. So, you know, they do the best they can. The ranges are basically a tool for us to use when hiring staff. And so they did find that the lower levels, grade levels, really did feel the compression, and that's where they're recommending the highest level of adjustments to them. There were a couple of positions that they took a look at, our facility specialist position compared to the park specialist, and they recommended that they put those on the same level. We also added kind of a manager level to the daycare early childhood teachers called co-coordinators that was discussed at a recent committee. Those they felt should be assigned a higher level grade in the teaching positions themselves. And then also to move all the department heads kind of at the same grade level. And those recommendations on the ranges are significant. By making adjustments to the ranges, there are certain staff that fall outside those ranges, and so the dollar value of those adjustments would be about $25,000. There's also several positions that barely are within the minimum range. So, for instance, a position that could be at a grade 12, position 12 and below are really the ones that have impacted. To really take a look at those and adjusting those could be over a multi-year process, but that we really need to bring some of those positions up, and primarily, again, if it's the early childhood area. So it does not look at benefits. I think we have a pretty rich insurance plan and other benefits that we offer, but it doesn't take into account that. But we know in the last year alone, we've lost some staff to other agencies. Not park district agencies so much, but to others. And I think, you know, we're always mindful, especially with staff that we know we do not want to lose. And sometimes it just depends on the market, and there could be an adjustment made mid-year that we have to look at to keep some of our staff. But these are at least a tool for ranges that we can identify. We know when we're posting a position, what we want to at least start them at. And then as they get more experience, we like to see them reach kind of a midpoint of those. And so this is a tool, not set in stone, and we make adjustments as we need it through Lisa, the executive director. But we're recommending that we incorporate these ranges and that the bulk of the adjustments would be made at the start of the next fiscal year, just to allow us to properly budget for them. And I think a big part of this too is communication to our staff. You know, really showing them what grade they're at, what the range is, and just the whole, which is separate from, of course, approving them, but it's a whole communication piece that I think is important for our staff to hear and to understand.
I have a whole host of questions. I'm
fine. Sure.
I, for one, feel the pain of turnover. I'm not happy about the same turnover. This process is I think if we are out of market, it's really good to understand that. I will remind everyone there's more than one way to compensate individuals. Not just salary. I tell people that, you know, would you make the jump? You know, what would cause you to jump to another place? Like what is the quality of life? And that's why I think, you know, for me, I really, really like doing things, beach passes, things that don't cost you, I get you a lot. Beach passes, fitness, flexible vacation, things like that are things that we absolutely should be thinking about in conjunction with this analysis. So I'd like to push you guys to think about it not just from a dollars and cents, but also from quality of life. What can we do? Can we let people work remotely?
Can you let, you know, as society change a little bit, what else can we do besides the salary? I can't opine on whether or not these salaries are right. It's totally out of my my wheelhouse. But I do think it's, you should think more than just salary. That is a really big part of it.
And Michael, I can't agree more. I agree with you on a lot of those points. But there's some, when you're looking at some of these lower, like the starting jobs, like Children's Circle Daycare or Parks Labor or whatever, $5,000 to $10,000 can make a difference.
Oh, it's huge.
You should be able to afford your copay or not. There's some things we can't do. We can't do flexible, like you can come in whatever hours you want in a lot of these positions. Some we can't. There's a hand, probably 10 positions we can have flexible work schedules or work from home or things like that. The majority of our jobs, we cannot do that. Obviously, our teachers, they have to be here. Program managers have to be here. Things like that. So we do allow for that flexibility, and we are going to continue to look at ways. And actually, that's going to be one of John's first tasks, is to look at how we can reimburse for college.
Yeah,
you know, college reimbursement, how we can do other things that would attract people to stay that maybe others aren't. People leave even McDonald's. I just saw that they're doing and stuff like that. So we're going to look at that. But pay is also, when you're talking about entry level.
Oh, it's the biggest. It's the biggest component.
It has to be, right?
You know, and you know, Michael.
So you know that.
All that really matters.
I am well aware.
Yeah.
I'm a big team.
Yeah.
People complain about the salary all the time. I get it. And I remind them about the benefits, and they remind them.
Yeah.
So it is much different with someone making 30 grand and someone making, you know, 70 or 80 grand. So I get it. I'm just, when this was presented like this, I'm just making sure.
Sure.
Bobby
even had some good communication with the, you know, the Children's Circle staff, and both part-time and full-time, of what can we do to retain some of these staff, and had some great ideas, you know, and we started.
Good.
We started reversing for class and then reimbursing for tuition for some of the staff, so we wouldn't have done that before. So I think that dialogue is going to be important when we can do that, for sure.
Can you layer in, I guess, both of you, some of the employee survey results into this discussion? Because that, in the packet, that has given you some input into what you can do.
Well, yeah, I would say that the employee survey has made us all think outside the box, right? We didn't ask particularly the survey, how do you like your pay? Because that's what people always say, I want more money. Well, who doesn't, right? So we knew that instead of asking that question, that we were going to do this to really see facts of whether we can do that. But other things were indicated, like how do you feel about the culture and how do you feel about different things that we take in. Not only this, but also getting other support, which will be another discussion, I mean, yeah, another business. But what else did we find out from the survey?
So to kind of, when you start with us, it's you say take job care, you start to the circle, it's expensive to start. You got to get shots, you have to get, you know, doctor visits. And there's quite a significant turnover, so rewarding staff who stay longer than 6 months. If they're going to survive the first 6 months, they're likely going to stay, you know, 2 years. So trying to incentivize people to get through that, making sure the onboarding process for new staff, that's part of the whole coordinator, that is key. It's like rather than getting thrown in a classroom in the first day and you have no training, making sure there's a structured training program so you feel like you're part of the team, you know, you get uniform, you get told, you know, if you're here a year, maybe there's some class reimbursement, because you know a lot of those staff are taking classes at community colleges, so knowing that I can get a X dollars every year, or is there some kind of health insurance stipend you can give to part-time? So those are the kind of things that came up. Thinking about thinking differently and having a broader range rather than saying this is the benefits, and a lot of those staff are saying, so I don't need that. What I really need is over here.
Looking at, for example, if you don't take our insurance, like, so say you're under 26 and your parents, which some of our staff are, or your spouse has them, or we have some who have their spouse take our insurance. What kind of financial incentive would we give them to not take the insurance or stay on theirs? Or if they choose to take ours and their spouse has insurance, a lot of corporations say, well, if you choose to take ours, you're going to pay a higher fee. Again, those are all things that we hope to put in time, like, to really investigate as we go forward.
We do that.
Yeah.
If my spouse is eligible for health insurance in our company, if they, the spouse rate will start to drop.
Right, exactly. So those are all things that we're looking at besides just, hey, how can we do that? That could help them.
And then you don't get insurance, you get extra $100 back. Right?
Yeah, they get one day, yes. So we want to make sure we do that. Right. And then rewarding for additional certifications. So, like, for example, Chris's guys, they keep on doing different, or girls, different certifications. They could get extra pay for those certifications because that will help us become a better rounded park district and be able to do multiple people do different tasks. So those are the other things we're looking at also. So, but we have to keep in mind that minimum wage is affecting our lower starting salaries for our entry level positions, and there's no way around that. So if we're trying to recruit, say, a full time early childhood teacher, full day teacher, and someone comes with 5 years experience, we're not going to start them at the minimum. We're going to start them 5 years into that cycle. You know, if they're a first time superintendent, they're going to start at the minimum if they don't have the experience that we need. But if they have 5 years experience being a construction laborer or whatever our position is, we're going to bring them into that wage. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. I think our Glencoe teachers, our school district teachers, are well compensated. I don't know how they fall in this.
Oh, they are. It's public.
Yes, it's
most, the vast majority make well over 90. They tranche it out.
I don't know the benchmark, but in comparison, I imagine they, and I think that the teachers of very young children in the same community should be treated with the same, treated in the same way in terms of how we value them.
Yeah, we often say preschool education is very similar to secondary and primary because people move to the community for that education.
Oh, they're definitely moving to our community for our full day and half day preschool.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
So,
and I think that's actually kind of that's how I looked at it. And I think that they would feel that respect if they do, because I'm sure that they come into Glencoe from outside the community often. More expensive to live here, and if they're coming in, they have an expectation that there's room for this in their compensation. They should be respected and so forth. So, I have no problem with this. How do we judge this? What do you want from us?
So, what we'll ask is that again, the next board meeting, just approve our salary range for. I guess it's more accept this
recommendation.
Not approving, it's accepting this recommendation.
Okay.
And so that gives us guidance moving forward. And I have the flexibility with the department heads to pay within those ranges.
What is the 1 year impact of making this change? First year,
they said was $25,000, but then there are certain staff that are right inside the minimum that will have to be adjusted. What that is adjusted to?
$25,000. Is the
total of the ones that fall out, they're outliers.
This is even worthy of.
Well, but their range is set for moving forward.
Yeah,
so that's where we get.
But then it might not.
The range should be in line with increased tax revenue. And I'm going to push this on you guys as well because I think we're hesitant to do it. If you're going to pay the teachers more, people are going to pay more. Your fees are going to have to go up.
Okay.
And so we have a high demand product. We have a wait list out there. Like, I don't think it's just, you know, on the taxpayer to absorb it. I think the fees have to go up at some point.
Taxpayer will make some service.
Well,
that's not how we do it, right?
Right.
ELC.
And so right now,
ELC and maintenance staff, you absolutely put
some impact.
Like, you absolutely. No, this is in their salaries.
User
fee
program.
We just have to keep that in mind. That, and that's just a way to make.
We do look at our staff rate. We look at our footage comparable to other preschools and daycares in the area. So we have to be
competitive with
pricing also, but also meet our indirect
name. That's right.
We have to be competitive, and I'm just going to remind you guys, my biggest pet peeves, is our wait list on our programs. You obviously have a phenomenal program with a ton of demand. I think paying our teachers right is absolutely the right thing to do. I think I'm glad we went outside. I'm glad that it's,
in the realm of 25 to 35,000. It's not like 100,000. But I do think that, you know, we have to think like a business as well. We can just think about the fee structure as well.
It is worth noting that a significant amount of child care facilities have closed recently. The actual supply is down a lot. We just had two local child care centers close, one in Mecca, one in Northbrook.
Demand now?
Honestly, it's not a business you want to be in. At the end of the day, there's a certain point where parents decide, you know what, a nanny is more cost effective. And that's the reality. The price increases is important, but at a certain point when you're paying $3,000 or $4,000 a month, your parents says, well, why work? I'll do a part day, or I'll do 2 days a week.
And is it really fair to, this goes on micro, or it's still a part just break. Is it fair to just say that the longer wealthy people in the community get this, you'll price it out.
You're seeing at the federal level with universal pre-K, so don't be surprised to see that there's a reason why federal government's having to step in and support pre-K.
Right.
Pre-K education is so important. You know, it's the same with primary and secondary. That's not user fee as supported. It's taxpayer supported.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right.
How many kids are in the? Let's put the math behind this. How many kids do you have in both programs?
Both programs over about 200.
So 200
in Children's Circle. Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about
the size of one grade at District 35. So kindergarten is about 100 to 110 kids.
So you're talking less than a dollar a day more. Remember that we also just raised people's taxes by 20 cents a day.
We're not saying we're going to not raise
the taxes. I'm going to tell you guys, you can't
tell me. Not even a discussion.
We always raise it now. 3 to 5% every year.
Right.
Whatever you
yeah.
say.
But that's, my point is that we can't say that it's only for the rich people and talk about like literally 40 cents a day more to make our teachers want to stay here is something that I think can be absorbed. It's not like we're asking them, okay, your tuition is $7,000 a year, now it's $10,000 a year. No, your tuition is $7,000 a year, now it's $7,200 a year.
Okay, so you're talking, we're in the same realm.
We're all
the
way
you're talking about which is well and higher.
Naturally, anyway, if we're continuing to cover our directed
what we naturally did before wouldn't cover this increase.
It may not. We might have made less of a net profit in order to be
remember.
And so we are not net as a
program.
That's
totally
fine.
The main chart here is the one from very end. Is that right?
Pressure of the minimum wage increases for over the next
couple of years still, I think the max, it goes through 2025. So we're seeing a little bit of an increase, but it's affecting the lower level of the full-time wages, or full-time grades.
We've got budgeted salary expenses for this year, and it looks like it would go up above that, right?
Well, that's why I would not adjust these really until the new fiscal year, if at all possible.
Here's the difference. We may adjust some because we had additional revenues in daycare, but not for some grant that we've received, so we may be able to do that because our revenue rose, our expenses can rise equally.
Yeah.
And so the budget.
I just be careful because then it's a compounding effect.
When is that?
March 1.
So are we in agreement, in consensus, to move this on to the board meeting and comply with the request?
Yes.
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 Good.
Yes, me as well. So, all right. Thank you.
Very good.
Okay.
All right. So, if that is it with that, we move on to other business. I will present some information.
We do have some words. First, I want to welcome John Okutera. He's our new director of finance and HR. So, thank you for being here today. And he will be training another Carol until her retirement at the end of the month. So, in addition, as I updated you on the Friday update, Liz Stoic has accepted a position at the Village of Menco, and so she will be leaving within 2 weeks. So that, you know, gives us some, obviously we're very sad to lose Liz after 16 years, but it's a great opportunity for her, so we can't begrudge her of that. She agrees, bad timing. We all agree, bad timing. But you can't always control those things when great opportunities come your way for professional growth. And so it's an opportunity that we do not have internally to be able to give her that growth. So it's very good for her. But with that, the change in staff, and our team was talking about this before even Liz, actually before even Carol announced her retirement, about that we really have to look at the business department as a whole. Because we've really grown a lot in the last 8 years. Daycare's grown, our programs grow. We were talking about the program brochures, how they were this thick and now they're this thick. So we've grown in a lot of other areas as far as support for personnel. And we still have some other recommendations from making other departments later on. But we really haven't added any help in the business services department. So when Jane left, she was a part-time bookkeeper. We then went up to hire Liz, an account manager slash HR. But then we really started looking at all the cultural changes that have gone on in HR in the last 5 years and the expectation of employees. So we don't have a dedicated HR person. And then when we did our employee survey, it really came full circle. Some of the things that was mentioned in the survey, we just don't have the personnel to achieve some of those goals, both for internally and for our board and for our community that we really wanted to try to achieve. So with this shift and with this change, it's an opportunity to help this department grow. So we want more staff engagement with the HR department is one of our goals. We want a more global view of what the Park District is and what one center person that kind of does as a works individually with the needs of each department, but also make sure everybody is treated fairly equally as far as training and other opportunities. We want some more conflict management training for our supervisors and for our staff as we move along. We want someone to overlook all the training in the department. One of our requirements of being a distinguished accredited agency and for our risk management is that we document all of our training, and we have a certain amount of trainings we have to do. And we don't have one central person that all those trainings go through as far as scheduling them and then the database that we're completing all those trainings on an annual basis. We don't have an onboarding program, really. It's come down to we hire so many staff in our children's circle and in our director of programming and in parks that it's such a burden on Jess and Amanda and Bobby and Chris and Carol to get this done, that it takes away from the job they should be. Not to say they won't still have to do this, they will. It's fine, but we need that one person connecting all those dots together to kind of make that happen. So you kind of see where I'm going with this. We really are at the point that we need a county manager and we need an HR manager. Two separate positions to then report to John. This will then free up some time for John to do some of these things that we've been talking about, which is more data analytics, more analyzing what we can do for compensation and how we compare it to other people. Things that Carol is working 50 hours a week and hasn't had the time to do. And it's not because she's not skilled, and we all know how skilled she is, it's just that there's not enough time in the day to get this done. And so when we look at the county part of it, we really need a segregation of duties. A lot of the stuff that Carol was doing, when you look at other business directors of finances, they're not doing it. It went all to the county manager. And we just didn't, because Liz's job was broken into two, didn't have enough time for her to do both. So then a lot of those duties fell on Carol that normally would not have done. It would take on tasks as far as risk management. With this HR position, we would put risk management. So risk management kind of broken down between Carol and Chris, and it still would be a little bit between those positions, but then this HR risk management person can make sure that all those trainings get done and everything for playground inspections are filed in and accessible when we go through our reviews. Am I missing anything else, guys, as we went through this? It would just help make sure our culture is even between else. Make sure that we have someone that can kind of concentrate on some of those, employee wellness things. Right now, our employee wellness through Proderma is orchestrated through Liz. So if we move that strictly to the HR person, they could do that. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. We have enough money in our budget. It just means that we won't set aside quite as much. But at some part, something has to give. And either we don't get all this done and we don't meet the needs of our staff and the board and the community, or we bring extra help in to kind of meet those needs. So that's kind of, I just wanted to let you know, because we're kind of going that direction. It's happening faster than I thought, because when Liz resigned, I'm like, well, if we're going to hire for a county manager, we should just hire for a county manager. And you're going to get a different kind of person than you go county manager HR. So that's why we want to move forward with the county manager, just separate that off. Then take some time for John to absorb his job and then really develop the job description for the HR risk management side of it. Yes, he gets to know his job a little bit more, and the staff has, we all have time to talk about it a little bit more. So in the meantime, you know, Bobby may take on some of the customer service roles until we replace that position. I'll take on some of the HR to start handling any lady things or employee grievances or anything like that until we get that person and John gets the new person trained. So I just wanted to throw that out there and let you know that that's kind of the direction I'm going in. See you if the board has any issues with that.
So Liz is leaving
2/14 in 2 weeks, which is good. And she's also agreed to work on one day on the weekend to help us through, which is very nice of her. Until I think when was it? End of July, and we can hire temps in the meantime also.
Sure.
But the sooner we get that advertised, the better.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's the position that we can't not have, so the timing of it,
but maybe capitalize on the timing.
Well, that's why I said,
sort of plan going forward. And they would both
report to John.
Yes.
Along with Lauren.
Yes,
Lauren
sir.
Is also reports to John as a classified. You know,
registration manager.
Registration manager. So those three positions that report to John and work together.
I can't believe that we have to wait until something like this happened to have an HR person.
I agree.
It's just
I mean, that's
well,
you know, this is one of the
big reasons why I was pushing for an employee survey beforehand is you want to find out the heartbeat of the community. And I think you need to do that here. So you will hear absolutely no issue for me. These are the kind of things that we questioned a while ago. So.
But I think it was a struggle because when I started, we just had a part-time bookkeeper.
Right.
We did.
And so it was a big deal to say we really need to make this
full-time
a full-time job.
Yeah.
You know, and
and we've grown so much since then. Just think about Children's Circle where it was before. Like, we were almost ready to close down Children's Circle when I got there. And the change we had made in that program, and that success has added a lot of staff. The same with general programming. Just that alone has increased the amount of staff we have part-time. So you have to, our seasonal staff. So you have to remember, every time we're successful, all those part-time staff and all those seasonal staff, they take that takes a long time. You know, it's so different than if you go to like a village who doesn't have any part-time, it's the same one. We have new staff every 3 months that are rolling in and rolling out. And it's a new job.
Right. I actually think it's a risk to not have. Yep.
Right? It's true. I mean, so that's why this, and like I said, we started this discussion way before Carol was retiring. This not something else that we're like, oh my God, we have to do this.
Yeah.
We've been thinking about this. Just now is the time to do it. We were going to try to see if we could wait till next budget year, but we're like, no, this is the time to do it. We're not going to bring someone in with both of those talents, and we could really focus on a really good county manager and then a really good HR manager.
How much was Liz doing with registration? Did that cover, or she
just wasn't? She was
done, really.
No, she was backup, but that's covered under like Lauren and Jill.
Yeah.
Jill took Liz's place, and she's doing a phenomenal job, and Amy, who's a part-time registrar.
My only question actually went back to the Corn Ferry numbers, and just as I remember reading it, it's for a 40-hour week, but we're talking about some people working more than 40 hours. Are we paying overtime or
no, for some staff we do, salaried staff we do not. So any of us in
the room? Are they leaving after 40 hours, or they're staying sometimes an extra 5 hours? Or?
For full time?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, a lot of us.
Let's go down lower on the salary.
Oh, lower. Yeah. They get overtime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They have to get approved for
overtime, which we tend not to do a lot of overtime for our hourly staff.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're talking for this one, it's more of our full-time staff. So right now, all the department heads, including myself, do a little bit of that HR, which just piles on our plates of what we're doing. And so it just causes...
That is not your area of expertise. I mean, not everybody's area of expertise is HR.
And part of that is... a different year, too, right? I mean,
yes, it is, Michael.
You cannot ignore the risks associated with what's going on in the world, in the country, I should say, not the world, but the country, and not have an HR person. Like, it is...
Well,
you're gonna
remember, we're pretty small, but part of it is just an inherent thing. If Bobby has a program manager that needs a performance, you know, he's still going to be actively involved in that.
Of course.
The HR person who does not necessarily know the job does not take over that whole responsibility.
Right.
So by virtue of our size and the way we structure our management, it's still going to have the supervisory change, but you still need a sole HR person.
We need someone who knows FMLA inside and out.
We need someone who's going to deal with DEI issues.
Exactly.
Inside and out. Like
all those issues that...
Someone's going to ask someone for the all-gender bathroom.
Right.
Right? I mean, those are the kind of things that are coming up in 2021. No organization.
Because they're going to get sued. Yep.
Going to get sued.
That's right.
So that's all those things that we really have to take a deep dive that we don't... We always say, oh, we'll get to it, and then we never get to it. So... You know, that will help us be more, this will all help us be more effective and efficient and more accountable to our staff.
I think we've done a good job.
Oh, we've done an excellent job.
That we have not had any personnel claims through Federal, but it takes a toll on everybody.
Yes.
So that's going to continue that strain because it gets more and more difficult.
No, you guys have far exceeded what I would expect to occur in a park district of this size with this much staff turnover. I mean, you know, all the changes that are going on, far exceeded. But you're right, it probably takes a toll.
It takes a toll on everybody. I mean, we all know when there's a personnel issue, it is.
We all saw it.
But you saw it in the survey too. People were talking about some of the stuff in the survey.
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
that's another part of it.
Are we doing the right things?
Right.
Or, you know.
And with that, and also there's going to be other changes. So, like, we need an office for HR. So what's going to happen is I'm going to move to the conference room. The conference room is going to move down to the knuckle area. John's going to move my office. HR's going to move to Carol's office, and then county manager will stay where Liz is. So that what came out is that people wanted a confidential place that they can go meet with the HR person, and this will allow that to happen.
Yeah.
So little changes like that will make all the difference. So like, oh, I can go in and talk. Right now they go in, and even if it's an address change, well, what if they don't want that person to know if there's an address change, you know? Yeah. Things like that, they just want to be able to go in and talk to someone. So.
I think it's great. I think it's really smart.
It's one of these issues that is best if that we listen to you.
Okay, appreciate that.
Us.
Yeah.
All right,
so
thank you.
I'm good. Well, that's all. Oh, yes.
My perspective from the village nominating committee was, as I looked and I did the profiles of the three different entities, and like it just jumps out. I mean, the park district is the dynamic entity in Glencoe, where there's so much seasonality and there's such a rise in the summertime and the different, you know, school semesters or, you know, getting the rink going. And to me, it's amazing how well you do that, but you've got to be set up so you can continue to do that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I would say you clearly need an HR person, and you want to shift the burden on the senior people back to somebody who's more mid-level.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just more efficient.
Exactly.
Very true. And this is the largest employer in
Glencoe.
It is, which is great. So, if there is nothing more on this, then, Lisa, any other business?
Nope, that's all I have.
Okay, then I need to make a motion to adjourn.
Second?
Oh, I need to move
first.
Oh,
second time I got to do that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Right.
Motion passes.
Thank you.